Happens when you play the lottery with a group of people at work, but unfortunately you're away on vacation, so you forget to get involved, and then it turns out that they win. Well, then you have to call some lawyers. A secret settlement has been reached in the Bombardier $50 million lottery dispute 4 days into the civil trial, says the Canadian press. The plaintiff in this case, Christopher Bates, claimed he was shut out from the winning lottery pool because he was on vacation, despite being a regular player. However, his 24 co-workers were expected to argue that the pool was no pay, no play, and was not a not regular, but organized randomly, usually when the prize was upwards of $30 million. So Bates testifies during the trial, scheduled for 10 days, that he got back from his January 2011 vacation and discovered he wasn't on his regularly lottery pool list for January 21st. Lotomax draw that won 5 free tickets. Then what happens after that is he finds out that he's not on. He gets upset about that. Apparently the organizer wouldn't let him join because another employee still owed him money. He would not allow him to join in the pool for the next draw on January 28th when the group won the Lotto Max jackpot. He went on to say, okay, if you guys win the lottery, I'm going to sue, and my lawyer is going to contact your lawyer. Now, Bates' lawyer, Michael Cochran, argued that as a regular player, Bates was owed a duty of good faith from his fellow members. The defense was expected to say that it was an unwritten rule in this pool that if a group won a free ticket and decided to play them, no one else could join the pool. This is complicated. The terms of the resolution are confidential. The lawyer representing the 24 Bombardier workers has mentioned that no one will find out exactly what happened except those involved. The clients, most of them still work at Bombardier, are happy with the result and glad that this has come finally to an end. The $2 million was held in trust by the court to be paid out to the lawyers and to the defendants. Cochran has also said he will not comment on any of the settlement terms. What have we learned in all of this, kids? Well, you need to pay attention. Just throwing $5 in an envelope isn't enough. You have to play in a timely way, knowing who is in the group, knowing the expectations of the group leader, knowing what has happened when you win, whether it's a free play or a $20 three-play ticket or $20. Group leaders need also to be aware of their responsibilities, from holding money in trust to purchasing tickets as agreed to distributing the winnings, he said. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. To talk more about all of this is Jan David Payne, barrister and solicitor, Payne Law, and with us now. Good afternoon, Jan. How are you today?
Very good. And yourself?
Good. Thank you for taking the time to join us. What do you think of when you hear of cases like this?
Well, always think that it's going to be a difficult run for the claimant or the plaintiff. The courts are always going to look at what these cases come down to is whether there was a binding agreement. And that sounds fairly straightforward, but the onus is always on the claimant or the plaintiff to prove there was a binding agreement. And a case like Bombardier, what you have is you have a large group play, and previous reported cases, the ones that I've come across, most of them are dismissed by the courts in Alberta and Ontario because the onus is just too much to overcome when you just have one person saying, well, this is a regular play, or this is a situation where they had a duty to make sure, inform me, or make sure that my ticket was played when I was not there. The reported cases in Alberta being the Clancy case and the arbitration case known as the Bell 19, that's exactly what happened. The arbitrator and the judge in those cases said, there's not enough evidence of a binding agreement, and so you're out of luck.
So this guy was quite lucky to get a piece of this then.
Well, we don't know. We just don't know whether he got a piece of it or not.
That's true. We won't, will we? We just know he got something.
Well, we don't know. We just don't know. And so 4 days of trial, that can be expensive. The cases where, someone does end up getting something, often they're settled. Most cases are. I was lucky enough to be with a firm, my former firm, where we worked on a lotto case in 2003. It's one of the only reported cases that I've come across where the claimant was actually successful. But in that case, there was actually some admissions and even some agreement that was reduced to writing. So that's really the lesson here is, if you can, reduce it to writing. Even Lotto OLG on their website has some tips, and they even have a lottery group play form to encourage people to play that way to avoid these disputes, because they get dragged into the disputes.
Yeah.
and sometimes the payouts are frozen or they have to pay into court, so they want to avoid that just as much as anyone else.
And I'm guessing not the PR that they're looking for either.
Not exactly.
Are you surprised that this was settled out of court?
I can't say. You know, like I said, if you look at the reported decisions, it looks to me like the plaintiff had an uphill battle with nothing reduced in writing, and the message coming from the courts and the arbitrators saying, you can't just go in and say, here's my story, you should believe me over the other guy. You need a little bit more than that.
So what are the rules? I mean, I think most would just assume it's you snooze, you lose.
It may be. If you can show that there was, as in the case that I mentioned about 12 years ago, my former firm worked on the case, Poole and Qureshi, and in that case, there was some admission that an arrangement was in place, and that was enough for the court to say, all right, well, you know, when the defending party is admitting that there was some arrangement, even though in that case the defendant basically scoffed and said, well, I was just joking, but there was also some written evidence, then that may be enough. But what you want to do is you want to have it in place so that there's an agreement, it's reduced to writing, what occurs when you're away on vacation, do they have a duty to play for you, then there's no confusion, and you're not rolling the dice down the road saying, I want a piece of that $50
million. The organizer said he was owed money. I mean, how much weight does that hold? I mean, obviously, you can't expect this guy to be buying tickets out of his own pocket.
No, exactly. And so I'm not that familiar with the facts of this case, and I heard your intro. I don't see what the relevance is of having another player not putting into the pool. One of the things, like I said, ultimately the court wants to know whether there was a binding agreement. Part of that may be whether you contributed. You know, in order for there to be a contract, there has to be an exchange.
Right.
But in this case, it's possible that the arrangement was that he would pay when he got back from vacation. Again, it's a hurdle that the plaintiff has to overcome.
They talk in this release about duty of good faith. Is that possible if you're owed money?
It is. I mean, a duty of good faith is a clever way of getting around to say, well, we had a binding agreement and you had to honor it. So I don't know that that may be fancy legal talk for saying that, you know, we had a deal, this was a binding agreement, and you breached it, and, you know, there were some extrinsic arrangements or duties owed beyond just not playing me. You had the duty to warn me, maybe, or whatever it is, if you were going to cut me out. Most of these games are informal, so usually, you know, these details aren't even considered. But at the end of the day, that's why you've got the lottery group play form on OLG's website, and that's why it's there, so that you don't have to put too much thinking into it. You can just pass it around, especially on these larger group play.
Now, let me ask you about that, Jan, because if the fact that obviously OLG lays this out for you, they show you how to do this if you want to do it right so you don't end up in this mess, isn't it your obligation to use that stuff so you don't get into this situation and does not hold any weight in court? Like, you know, obviously, you guys didn't do any of this, so you weren't covering your basis.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the onus is on the claimant or the plaintiff to prove the case. And so at that point, if the claimant didn't take positive steps and can't show that there was a binding agreement, one of the things that they could show is if there was some sort of practice, written agreement, or whatever it was. If that's missing, then that hurts the claimant. It doesn't really hurt the core group, what's referred to as the core group, because, you know, they've got their own arrangement and no one's disputing it.
Obviously, we don't know, as you said, this is all hypothetical what we're speaking of, but does it sound like to you the group sat there and said, you know what, this isn't worth it, we're kicking Buddy out here, we should owe him his money and I'll get along and move on?
It's possible. I mean, you know, lawyers do have a duty to encourage reasonable settlement. So hopefully both sides had some discussions with their lawyers and the lawyers had a chat and said, you know, how much are we spending? 4 days of trial is not cheap. And hopefully somebody came to the table and decided to make some form of contribution. It's just as possible that after 4 days in trial, one of the parties gave up.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say.
What would the lawyer cost be for something like this? Obviously, again, you can't give this an exact figure, but how much a chunk out of this money would be lost to a lawyer fees?
It depends on the arrangements you have with the lawyer. You know, if it's a strict hourly rate, I would expect certainly upwards of $50,000 for 4 days in trial and
yep,
all the prep that goes into it and examinations beforehand, etc.
So, at the end of the day, what lessons can we learn from this, Jan?
Well, to just keep in mind that if you're a claimant, the onus is on you to prove that there's a binding agreement. So you can avoid that by having something reduced to writing. It sounds lame, I know, but that's why these forms on the OLG website come in really handy. You know, the judges will accept oral evidence, and it's possible that they'll accept your testimony, but on the balance of probabilities, that's the civil test, you have to show, you know, it's not enough to be 50-50. You have to have that extra, you know, 1% to convince the judge that it's more likely than not that this was a binding agreement. So get it in writing. Judges like written records, and you can avoid a lot of this. And make sure you pay in advance, because the other thing is, if you're not paying, are you playing?
Good point. All right, and obviously if you're the organizer, boy, to make your life less complicated, that's the way to go. Jan David Payne has been with us, barrister and solicitor, Payne Law. Thank you very much for the time. Much appreciated.
I appreciate it.
All right, it is 149. It's 900 CHML. I'm Scott Thompson. A chance for you to win some Tie Cats tickets when we return.
Jim Finley here from John Bear, helping you take the guesswork out of shopping for...